Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, this news that has just broken in the last hour, a press conference held with Baltimore City Police Commissioner Michael Harrison and Mayor Brandon Scott, as well as Shante Jackson, who's the head of the Mayor's Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement. They announced that there has been an arrest in the murder of Dante Barksdale. Garrick Powell has been apprehended and charged in Dante Barksdale's murder. Dante Barksdale, of course, a very prominent member of the Safe Streets organization. He's the community outreach coordinator, a violence interrupter working to end violence on city streets. He himself, the victim of violence. There has now been an arrest in that case. By the way, coming up tomorrow here on Midday, completely unrelated, conversation with a Korean-American musician who has written a memoir about her experience caring for her mom during her mother's terminal illness. Michelle Zauner fronts a band called Japanese Breakfast, and her memoir is called Crying in H Mart. Michelle Zauner will join me tomorrow here on Midday. And joining me now are two African-American activists and organizers who are part of the leadership team that is steering the Baltimore Children and Youth Fund. The fund was created in 2017 after being overwhelmingly approved by voters in a referendum the year before. The fund is virtually unprecedented in that its assets come from city property tax revenues, but the process for distribution of those assets resembles that of a private foundation, at least in some respects. Davon Love is the director of public policy for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. He was instrumental in getting the fund established, and he is serving as the fund's community engagement lead. Davon, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back on, Tom.
John Morris is an attorney and a former dean at Sojourner Douglas College. He's a co-founder of Change for Real, a development initiative in Old Town. He serves as the treasurer of the fund's board of directors. John Morris, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
So they are here with me on Midday today, and listeners, you are welcome to join us as well. Has your community benefited from some of the programs that the folks who've gotten grants from the Baltimore City Children and Youth Fund? Let us know about what your experience with the Youth Fund has been. 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWIPR. So Davon, let me begin, if you wouldn't mind, with a brief recap of what's happened. So there was a proposal by Jack Young at the time he was the city council president. It went to a referendum to the voters in 2016. It overwhelmingly passed. And then bring us up to date. Give us a sketch of what's happened with the fund since then.
Yep. So, so after the referendum was passed, there was a task force that was convened in February of 2017 that lasted a few months that laid out the general framework for the youth fund. Because even though the allocation of funds was approved by the voters, the question becomes how it gets administered. And there was a recognition by the task force. These task force meetings were held in City Hall and they were public. And there was a recognition of the existence of racism and white supremacy in the philanthropic and nonprofit sector. And what that actually means in practice is that Black folks are often primarily understood as recipients of services, folks who are inherently pathological. And so the theory that undergirded the youth fund that comes out of the task force is the fact that the community is not a problem to be fixed, but a solution to the problems of the community. And so there was an emphasis on building capacity and providing technical assistance to grassroots organizations. And so that was one of the central charges, because what is important is building out, creating the resources, because the inequity of access to resources created a dynamic where there wasn't enough of the infrastructure needed for grassroots community-based organizations to be able to have access, to be able to provide services. And when I say infrastructure, that means things like, you know, the weak fiscal sponsorship ecosystem, things like lack of access to culturally affirming evaluation support. You know, evaluations are important in getting access to more funding, or things like just having a platform to promote the work that folks are doing on the ground. And so since the task force convened, finished its work, an ordinance was passed that tasked Associated Black Charities with incubating the development of the institution that would administer the youth fund. while also simultaneously distributing the first set of funds to grassroots organizations. And so in 2018, there are about 84 organizations that received a total of $9.6 million in funding. And then there was a continuation grant that was released for 78 organizations. So those same 84 could apply for a continuation. So 78 got continuation grants that totaled just under $8 million. And so when we look at the portfolio, one of the things that we're very proud of is that 66% of the organizations funded are Black-led organizations. Majority of the workforce of the organizations funded by the Youth Fund are Black folks. The majority of the board members of the organizations that are funded are folks of color. 20,000 young people served in both years of the operation of the Youth Fund. And so where we're at today is a transition period where we now have, as you mentioned before, John Morris, who is the other guest, is the chair of a board of a intermediary that was created by the City Council in April 2020. And this transition board will help build the institution and be able to extend on the work that the Youth Fund has already done.
And John Morris, the transition is to take away responsibility for running the Youth Fund from Associated Black Charities, who were engaged initially to sort of get it going. And then it is going to be an independent entity. So talk about your work on the board. What does the board of directors do? What is your purview? What is your responsibility moving forward?
I think the great challenge on the board is implementing what's a relatively novel model for how to go about philanthropic distribution of support to the community. Our job is to establish on the ground the prevailing rules, to embody the ideas that drove the activists who framed the idea of a fund to Mayor Young and the City Council, and to begin to lay the foundation for the values that we're looking to embody, which would be racial equity, community ownership, the empowerment of young people in addressing their own problems. So these are not the kinds of things that conventional not-for-profits in the area have done. I think, as Davon has indicated, that too often the community has been viewed as a client to be served as opposed to a resource to be awakened. And that's what we've been trying to do. How do you put the structure in place that awakens the community to do better the things that people have been struggling to do on their own? It's remarkable the extent to which grassroots organizations in this town have struggled on a shoestring to do good work. So the idea behind this fund is to enable them to reach their full potential, to take charge of many of the initiatives that they kind of hint at. So they're at the center of solving the city's problems and charting the future for the city's young people.
John Morris is an attorney and the former dean at Sojourner Douglas College. He serves as the treasurer of the Baltimore Children and Youth Fund's Board of Directors. Davon Love is the Director of Public Policy for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. He is the fund's community engagement lead. We're talking about the Baltimore City Children and Youth Fund. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR. So, Davon, what have you learned, do you think, in the 3 or 4 years that the fund has been gradually finding its sea legs and getting underway? You've had an initial group of organizations that have received money. Some of them are fairly large and established, and they have, grant writing divisions in their administrative staffs. They have experience doing budgets. They have experience getting grants, accounting for the money, writing the narrative about the programs that they're giving. But as you mentioned, a number of these grassroots organizations, these smaller organizations who've been working in their neighborhoods and in their communities for years, don't have that structure. Has that been a challenge? And if so, how have you addressed it?
Yeah, so that's a really good question, Tom. So there are three things that come to mind that I think really important learnings. The first is that there isn't enough public conversation around institution building and institutional formation. And that's critically important because I think when people think about granting money, I think sometimes people imagine it literally as like giving bags of money to people, not recognizing that it's important that when you think about how do you take public dollars and put it into the hands of community, there are lots of processes and institutional and structures that need to be built that for most people seem, mundane. And I'll give an example. There was one of the challenges the first year that dollars were given out is that the level of insurance that is required by the city in order to give grant dollars, we had a hard time finding brokers that would insure some of the smaller grassroots organizations, because they were used to insuring many, as you mentioned, many of the kind of established organizations that folks, that are familiar with. And so we had to work creatively to try to find a broker that will provide the insurances to grassroots organizations that many of them wouldn't have had access to otherwise, right? And so that's one major learning. It's just that institutional formation, particularly as it relates to empowering the community, is something that deserves more public conversation. Because I think a lot of what we have gotten over the years is people saying, where's the money? Why haven't things moved more quickly? And building institutions just takes a lot of time. The second major learning is that public dollars are just very difficult to move. Many of our grantees, as you mentioned, the reporting requirements are very burdensome. And one of the things that the Youth Fund has done over time has been to hire financial technical assistance providers that can help organizations that struggle with meeting the administrative burdens to provide them the support they need in order to be able to meet that burden. And so public dollars are difficult to move. And I think it begs some policy discussions as to how do we make public dollars more accessible while also still having those dollars be accountable to the public. And so that's really the second learning. And there are many grantees that, rightly have complaints about the process because of just how cumbersome that is, right? And so that's something that we'll continue to learn. And then the last, I would say, major learning is that, man, this portfolio has some amazing grantees in it. And there is not nearly enough attention put to the amazing work that folks on the ground have been doing. As John said, in spite of having to work on a shoestring budget, in spite of not having access to a platform to be able to tell the world about the work they're doing. Students who've gone to the continent of Africa to do videography, folks that have learned, how to be trained to be a barber, folks who've learned how to make compost, right? Just all kinds of amazing things that are happening. And we just have been struck by the fact that unfortunately that hasn't gotten enough attention. So we've worked to try to put more attention on that. If you go to BCYF's Facebook page, and you go back some, you'll see some of the showcases we've done about grantees. But that's something that for us, we want to make sure we do more of, is really tell the story of the work that's happening so that more people can see that stuff is happening in Baltimore.
Davon Love is my guest. He is the community engagement lead for the Baltimore Children and Youth Fund. John Morris is here as well. He serves as the treasurer of the board of directors of the Children and Youth Fund. We're going to take a quick break and we will continue our conversation on the other side. You can join us at 410-662-8780. You can email us midday at wypr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWIPR. You can follow me on Twitter at @TomHallWIPR. Stick around.
Yeah. You're listening to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. It's midday. If you've just joined us, we're talking about the Baltimore Children and Youth Fund. It was proposed in 2015 by then City Council President Jack Young. And in 2016, voters by a margin of more than 80% approved the creation of the fund, which designates that 3 cents of every dollar of city property taxes be spent on programs for Baltimore's young people. This year, that amounts to roughly $12 million. Davon Love was an early proponent and advocate for the Children and Youth Fund. He's the public policy director of Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, the organization that is guiding the fund as it gets established and as organizations build capacity to present programs that are valuable and sustainable. John Morris is an attorney and activist who serves as the treasurer of the board of directors of the Baltimore Children and Youth Fund. You are welcome to join our conversation, 410-662-8780, our email midday at wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is at midday. WIPR. Before we go to the phones, John Morris, let me ask you to explain the process involved in going from the transitional board of directors that you're now part of to a permanent board of directors. And I understand that January 1st of 2022 is your goal for establishing a permanent board. One of the things that distinguishes the Children and Youth Fund is that you've been very elevating the importance of process and the transparency around the process. So explain why you need to go from this transitional setup to a permanent setup and how you're going to achieve that.
We have a unique mission. It's not just to constitute ourselves as another one of the not-for-profits in the landscape of Baltimore City. Our charge is to establish ourselves as a entity that makes community active as a solution to the issues presented by the community's own young people. And to do that, I think we have to establish essentially an entity that and invent structures that haven't existed in Baltimore before. I'm not saying that there haven't been not-for-profits that have sought to improve the life of children, but they have not sought to enable and empower the children's own community as the primary vehicle for doing that. And so in order to constitute ourselves, we also have to constitute ourselves as an organization to establish processes for handling money so that we can be transparent. Part of our mission is to be an entity that's participatory as far as the community is concerned, that engages the community in the collective decision-making that we implement. We have a concept of a public assembly that we have to create a structure for that to work. We certainly have a vision of being able to implement notions of racial equity in a city in which racial equity is a challenge. So we have to invent those processes. We are looking to establish community ownership. And right now, those are just words. We have to make those words operational. And the question becomes, what is the structure that does that? And those are some of the things we've been exploring. And I think that the maybe the least of the things, which I haven't mentioned, is that in doing those very difficult and new things, we have to engage actively young people, not just in a symbolic way or a representative way, but in an active and functional way. So how that gets done, in addition to managing the distribution of the product of that 3% of the tax fund is what has taken a lot of our time, managing our portfolio, establishing at least the program of technical assistance to our grantees. We also have to lay the groundwork of a future that future boards will follow when this entity becomes a permanent caretaker of these funds. And not just the caretaker of the funds, the caretaker of the vision of a philanthropic entity that empowers and mobilizes community to solve these problems.
Let's go to the phones to Phil, who's on the line from Baltimore. Phil, welcome to Midday with Davon Love and John Morris.
Thank you. I guess first, I think it's just important to recognize how unique and important this effort is, as John just recently emphasized. It's not just distributing money. It's really creating a process by which young people, their families, their advocates are able to determine what should get funded and facilitate that. And in that light, there are a lot of other people now, funders, who have talked about wanting to do funding that really supports community efforts. I'm wondering if there's specific lessons that they've learned or activities they think that are critical that some of these groups could be using in distributing their own funds, in addition to the general work that they've just talked about very well in terms of creating this whole new way of identifying needs and meeting those needs.
Yeah, so I would say, appreciate the question. I would say a couple things. One, there's actually a project that, we've been in conversations with, a project called Be More Invested, headed by OSI Baltimore and Baltimore's Promise, an effort that, in terms of vision and values is very aligned to BCYF, using kind of participatory practices around decisions of grant making. I would say, one of the biggest lessons that we've learned, and I think other funders, as Phil mentioned, wanting to learn some of these lessons, is around really what to look for. We're at a moment where there are lots of folks that are using the words racial equity, but in terms of how to operationalize it, that's more difficult. And so when we look at different programs that are providing services to youth, a big part, I think, of the learning that we're recognizing, given the current portfolio of grantees and just the work it took to get to the place of dispensing resources, is really developing a clear sense of what we're looking for in terms of the kinds of programming that actually empowers youth and the community that young people come from. And so I think that's a major learning that needs to happen. I think too often, just the mere desire to want to help has been enough. And I think what we've learned is to really look at programs that are doing work with young people, we have to go beyond just folks' desire to want to help and actually look at the methodologies being deployed by different programs and looking for the genius in programs that are community-based and grassroots as a way to think about the kinds of organizations that need to get funded.
And John Morris, in the first round of grant giving, you gave away about $9 million, but you had $75 million worth of requests. So there were people who had ideas about programs that they wanted to present that you weren't able to fund. One of the things that strikes me that's quite unusual about the Children and Youth Fund is that you offer this technical assistance even to people you're not giving grants to, right? I mean, it is an available resource for folks who have small programmatic organizations who can come and learn about really the fundraising game and the fundraising system and learn about the infrastructure that they need. But you'll help folks whether or not they are a current grantee. Do I have that right?
I can't speak to that directly, but I think the idea is our technical assistance is to expand the economic impact of the funding we have, that by giving small organizations our technical assistance, we enable them to better tap the larger resource of funds that are available so that there is a resource that goes beyond the dollars we have to distribute. I think the problem that you've identified is an old problem. I was years ago on the board of Associated Black Charities. That was the problem consistently there. There was greater need than there were funds to address. And the challenge is strategically, how do you deploy the funds in a way that meets the greatest need? We've used our technical assistance as a way of doing that. We've also used our ability to use the money to create partnerships with other players in the philanthropic landscape so that we began deploying funds we don't control towards many of the otherwise deserving small community-based grassroots organizations who are positioned in the community to have a unique insight. I think one of the problems that we have as a city is that the problems that we face are complex. And the people who have an insight in dealing with that complexity very often, too often, don't have access to the funding, and the people who have the funding don't have the insight. Mm-hmm. So the challenge is, how do we connect resources to insight? And some of it is, I think you mentioned earlier, that some of our funding has been with seemingly well-heeled organizations, and that's not just to make a safe allocation to an entity that's used to handling money and reporting results, but large resourced organizations are players in directing solutions. And one of the things we can do with money, in addition to supporting people who don't have it, is leveraging the behavior of people who do.
Mm-hmm. And Devon, we just got 40 seconds left. It is extraordinary that your portfolio has 2/3 of the grantees are led by African Americans. I mean, I don't think there's another nonprofit foundation, you know, who can say that. And you and I have talked about this many times before. You've referred to a lot of the folks in the nonprofit community here in Baltimore as well-meaning as they might be, as the nonprofit industrial complex. Succinctly, what is it that they have to learn from the Children and Youth Fund? How would you like to see this spread even beyond BCYF?
I think the issue of building infrastructure. So I mentioned like fiscal sponsorship, which is something that's in an effort that the Youth Fund is going to do in 2021 is support investments in fiscal sponsorship, you know, using things like developing the infrastructure to give organizations the platform they need. And so we think it's important for the philanthropic community to build the infrastructure so community-based organizations have access to be able to drive the process of serving young people as opposed to just merely being recipients of services.
Devon Love and John Morris there with the Baltimore Children and Youth Fund. Gentlemen, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, a conversation with Michelle Zauner. She's a musician who performs as Japanese Breakfast, and she's written a terrific memoir. I found it to be really touching and masterfully crafted. It's called Crying in H-Mart, and it has deservedly gotten a lot of buzz. So I'm looking forward to speaking with Michelle Zauner about her book tomorrow on Midday. Stay tuned now for Here and Now. That's on the way after the news at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for joining us today on Midday. We'll talk again tomorrow.
You're listening to your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.